Baker McKenzie welcomes you to TMT Talk, the global TMT podcast series, focusing on sector-specific issues that are impactful on players in the technology, media, and telecoms industry.
Welcome to another episode of TMT Talk, the global tech sector podcast. I'm Kim Sartin, a partner from London, and a member of the Global Tech Sector Steering Committee. In this episode, we will be focusing on antitrust issues in the tech sector, including merger control developments, theories of harm when assessing transactions, and antitrust trends and the risks associated with them. Joining me today to set the scene are Paul Johnson and Brian Burke. Paul is a partner in our Brussels office and has extensive experience in all areas of EU competition law, including multi-jurisdictional and EU merger control, foreign investment review, joint ventures, cartels, abuse of dominance, distribution, and other commercial relationships. Brian is a partner based in Washington, D.C., who counsels clients on all federal antitrust issues and in successfully navigating the merger clearance process before the U.S. and international antitrust authorities. Welcome to you both. Very excited to have you here. Let's jump right in. Could you tell our audience about the key developments in merger control that are relevant to the tech sector in the US, Europe, and the UK? Paul, perhaps we can start with you.
Great, sure. And thanks. Great to be here. So first, let's start with news from the UK. So as part of the wash-up of legislation ahead of the UK general election, the Digital Markets Competition and Consumer Bill was passed in 11 minutes as part of the wash-up of legislation. This introduces new UK merger control filing thresholds, which targets large technology companies and, frankly, other large successful companies. Two main changes to note is the turnover test of the target increases from 70 million to 100 million, and the share supply test there remains the same of 25%. And a new threshold is introduced, giving the CMA the power to review mergers where one party has a share supply greater than 33% and has a turnover exceeding 350 million. So the UK government has stated that this threshold is intended to capture vertical and conglomerate mergers, and in particular, so-called killer acquisitions that risk the development of new products or services. Second, the UK has been busy. They have a new consultation on digital markets competition regime. The CMA's consultation is 188 pages long. The CMA is also consulting on separate draft guidance on mergers reporting requirements for firms with strategic market status. Baker McKenzie will be publishing a separate client alert, providing more details on both the new act and responding to the CMA's consultation on digital markets competition regime. So two big points there in the UK. Now turning to the EU, three points to note. So first, the DMA deal making by gatekeepers is under scrutiny. Digital gatekeepers notified six transactions to the EC between October 2023 and April 2024 under new rules that oblige them to inform the Commission about any acquisitions they make in the digital sphere. The list of transactions is published by the EC and has kind of had a number of gatekeepers notifying transactions. Second, the European Commission and EU member states are increasingly looking at ways to review transactions through the back door. And they're doing this in two ways. First, under Article 22, to referral policy rendering EU merger control essentially semi-voluntary. They've had a change in the EU referral policy, which now allows the EC to catch transactions not meeting the EU filing thresholds based on EU member states' referrals. The key point to note here is there's been a number of cases looked at by the EC, but in an opinion on the 21st of March 2024, the European Court's General Advocate has suggested that the EC's interpretation of Article 22 is not supported by the law, i.e. the review mechanism as commonly applied would be illegal. It is yet to be seen whether the European Court will follow this opinion, but we will obviously update that in due course. And third, mergers could be looked at as an abuse of dominance. So following a recent decision, national competition authorities and courts can review acquisitions by dominant entities under abuse of dominant laws if those acquisitions are not notifiable under EU or national merger control laws. So the requirements for this to apply is the merger is not caught under EUMR national merger control rules and wasn't caught by Article 22, and the acquirer is a dominant company and this acquisition substantially impedes competition. Consequences of this is that kind of national competition authorities and courts can review future and past transactions, even if they have closed. This gives rise to significant risk of third-party complaints, rivals or customers, which can challenge transactions by strong market players. Also gives rise to the possibility of increased fines, behavioral commitments, and also the risk of potential requirement to unwind transactions. And then the other big point to note is that when you kind of look at how some of this is being applied in practice, given how the UK and the EC is developing, you are seeing a number of cases where they've either been blocked by the UK before being ultimately approved, or they've been blocked by the EC and were cleared in the UK in phase one. So we've had about, I think, two recent tech deals which were cleared in the phase one by the UK but blocked by the EC, and one which was kind of blocked by the UK before ultimately being approved, where the EC gave applied remedies. So I think we'll expect to see continued divergence into how the UK and the EC look at these transactions, but I would say they're both looking at kind of technology transactions with heavy scrutiny. Over to you, Brian, as to what are the latest kind of developments in the US.
Thanks, Paul, and thanks for the opportunity to participate on this podcast. The leadership of the US antitrust agencies under the Biden administration have been very active, taking many steps from the outset with respect to mergers. Of late, two most important developments I'm going to talk about, first being the new merger guidelines that were issued at the end of 2023. They effectively withdrew the 2010 horizontal merger guidelines and combined what were separate vertical merger guidelines with the horizontal to single merger guidelines, so all theories of harm. The principal changes for the new guidelines are lower concentration thresholds for triggering adverse presumptions under both the Herfindahl-Hirschman Index, HHI, calculation and a presumptive adverse effect presumed at 30% share. Separately, they focus and highlight concerns on vertical issues that were not present in the 2010 guidelines. So foreclosure theories, innovation theories of harm, etc. A new category of harm that they've highlighted is labor, specifically the impact that increased concentration has on labor markets, specifically employees. And they have been investigating transactions for labor issues and have challenged transactions on the basis of the impact that the combination would have on workers. Completely new category of harm. Importantly, these are just guidelines. And as I mentioned, they were just adopted. Courts in the United States may or may not accept the guidelines or use them as persuasive authority. There have been a few challenges since the guidelines have been issued, but courts, they're not sufficient decision-making authority to determine what and how those new guidelines are going to be treated. And obviously, different courts may take different approaches with respect to the guidelines. So we'll see how persuasive the courts ultimately view these new guidelines and these new theories of harm. The second development that's significant is proposed changes to the notification form, the Hart-Scott-Rodino form, the HSR filing is the notification that parties have to submit to the FTC and the DOJ to get approval for transactions. And the form has, with modest changes since the act initially passed in 1976, has been essentially the same. These changes that were proposed by the leadership of the Biden administration are monumental. And the objective of the proposed changes is to bring the form closer to a European style of notification that puts more of the burden on the private parties that are notifying the deal, have to increase narrative submissions, ordinary course materials have to be produced, you have to provide new detail on prior acquisitions. The proposals impose new burdens on the parties. If adopted, they'd be much more costly and time-consuming to prepare. There have been a lot of public comments made on the proposed changes. That's the process that the proposal has to go through. It has to be subject to public comments. And a lot of adverse comments have been submitted. The agencies have indicated that changes to the proposal are likely to be made, but we'll see what those may be. Unclear whether and when the proposed amendments in the final form will be announced. Obviously, this is 2024. It's an election year. Query whether they'll even issue them prior to the election. Importantly, the proposed changes to the form were made prior to the confirmation of the two Republican commissioners on the FTC. So now that those commissioners have been seated, their input may be delaying the issuance of the final changes. But we'll see on, you know, the timing of that to be determined. There's no deadline or anything like that. Final comment on the proposed changes to the HSR, it is a rulemaking that is subject to challenge by private parties. It has to be subject within the statutory authority of the agency. And we expect that private parties will challenge the final rule when issued. And that will likely delay the effective date of any changes to the form. So those are the changes in the United States that have been most noteworthy of late with respect to mergers.
So in this fast-moving environment where we're seeing increased scrutiny around technology matters, can you tell us more about the theories of harm being used to challenge transactions?
Happy to take the lead from the EC perspective. So the first is kind of really focuses on new theories of harm, and I think some contrasting approaches results between the UK and the EC. So the EC is increasingly focused and is growing its expertise around ecosystem theories of harm, kind of more conglomerate theories, and interoperability related theories of harm, as well as ongoing concerns regarding R&D, innovation and data. So in a recent decision, which the EC blocked an acquisition in September, this was as a direct result of ecosystem concerns. The EC views the decisions based directly on the merger regulation and that the prohibition decision is in response to the rise of mergers in ecosystems where a company operates on several linked markets. The company in question is appealing the decision, arguing that the EC wrongly found that the deal could cause a significant impediment to effective competition. Shortly after that deal in January, the EC informed a company that it would prohibit an acquisition on the basis that they were concerned that it would have the incentive to foreclose rivals by preventing or hindering them from selling competing products on their own marketplace. Now, the EC also considered effects of innovation and privacy, but the decision they claim was ultimately based on classic concerns on self-preferencing. And I think what you see in both of these cases is a kind of rise of the ecosystem theory of harm. We saw that last year as well by the UK and the EC with respect to a major transaction in computer gaming. And I think we'd expect these types of concerns to continue in the future, where particularly players with two large positions come together, and while there may not be any direct overlaps, the authorities are kind of taking a negative view, thinking that there must be some harm to competition, even if the products are very complementary and are kind of exploring both conglomerate theories of harm and ecosystems theory of harm. I think what was interesting in both these cases that were kind of blocked by the EC or would have been blocked before the deal being abandoned is that the UK CMA approved both of these transactions in phase one. So, Brian, throwing the ball over to you, what's going on in the US?
And thanks, Paul. Similar story here. The authorities are aggressively asserting theories of harm against noteworthy parties, large companies that are doing high value deals or even small deals if they're a well-known technology company. They have not been afraid to bring actions to challenge the deals in court. They've made several vertical challenges of late, including to technology deals. They've also, similar to the EU, have asserted conglomerate theories of harm, bundling, nascent competition theories, and as I mentioned previously, even labor. One transaction subject to challenge in court actually asserts a harm on the union's ability to collectively bargain with a combined entity if the merger were to go forward. Will be very interesting to see what the court does with that theory. In addition, they also have asserted a presumption, as you mentioned, Paul, that if you're even where there's not a direct overlap or what would traditionally be a problematic overlap, they're very fearful of missing something. And so novel theories of sort of a big is bad theory of harm has been at least explored, if not asserted in court. There's been many cases since the Biden administration has been in place. There's been mixed success for the agencies. They have several losses. They've been very reluctant to make settlements, merger settlements with parties. They'd rather sue. But they have agreed to a few settlements following the initial filing of litigation to challenge the deal and then receiving a preliminary adverse indications from the judge in the case. And then they've settled to avoid the trial. And they've had some wins, of course, as well. So that is what's going on the theories of harm front in the United States.
Is there anything else you wanted to share on future trends that tech companies should be aware of right now?
From kind of a UK-European perspective, then there's three big trends to be aware of. First, a continued focus on internal documents in the EU and the UK. Authorities are doing complex internal document reviews and their increased utilisation of technicals and data specialists. And I'd say these are the new normal in kind of non-simplified EC merger cases with new notification forms with extended internal document and data submission requirements. The UK CMA continues to make use of Section 109 requests, kind of focusing on internal documents and emails with extensive reviews required prior to submission, often on tight deadlines for privilege purposes and to also undertake an assessment as to what's going in. And in the UK as an authority, it's also really exploring ways that they can then review all these documents in a timely manner. And I think I'm also looking at kind of AI or other software tools so that they can, once documents are submitted, really get to the hot documents as quickly as possible. Second, we are seeing an increasing number of complainants or strategic complaining, either from customers or competitors, wanting to either disrupt transactions or seeing merge control as an opportunity to kind of almost benefit themselves. I think what we're seeing there, particularly the smart complainants, is they're linked in with these new theories of harm around innovation or killer acquisitions, which are setting out claims in the future, which makes it very difficult for the notifying parties to push back on, given that it is a kind of forward-looking claim as how a market will evolve, as opposed to a kind of concrete assessment on existing data. I think the authorities themselves, so if you listen to the ICN conference with Munt from the FCO, also recognize that these type of assessments are incredibly difficult because you don't know how the market is going to react or evolve in 3, 4, 5 years' time, particularly when tied into innovation theories. So I think it's difficult for the authorities. It's difficult for the merging parties. I think if you're a complainant, there is perhaps some opportunities there if you want to use that in a clever manner. And I think finally, for big M&A transactions, it's no longer merger control. Companies in Europe at least now have to consider foreign direct investment. It's been a thing in the US and CFIUS for a very long time. But in Europe, you've now got almost all EU member states having an FDI regime. And in addition to that, you will also have to consider, depending on how much subsidies and the size of your deal, the new EU foreign subsidy regime, in which a number of transactions are being looked at closely. And we have seen a few transactions or companies already investigated and some public procurement deals fall over when the EC has been looking closely at Chinese entities. So they're the kind of three big things for companies to think about going forward. Over to you, Brian.
Thanks, Paul. In the US, there's a few things of late to note. One is focused on so-called roll-up acquisitions, where these are acquisitions where an entity in a particular field makes a series of acquisitions over years, strengthen or establish a position in a particular market. This has been an area of interest of late by the agencies. They've made public statements about them and the concerns presented by them, specifically that they may be smaller and not require a notification under the HSR Act. So the agencies are not made aware of the deal prior to the closing of them, and the consolidation happens and they're unaware of it. One transaction of note recently, they did challenge in court on a roll-up theory that remains pending. A decision hasn't been made by the court yet on the merits, but notably in that case, the FTC sued a minority investor and attempted to hold that minority investor liable for the acts of the entity that was making the roll-up acquisitions. The court dismissed the claim against that minority investor, but it was notable that the FTC tried to entangle the minority position despite its lack of control. Separately, the FTC and DOJ announced a public request for information regarding any roll-up acquisitions that individuals may be aware of, essentially to report potential roll-up strategies to the agencies. We'll see whether that results in anything or any actions being taken by the agencies or any reports being made to the agencies in response to that request, but it was a notable nonetheless. Another development of late, or at least during the Biden administration, is concerns that the agencies have expressed regarding transactions that have long since closed, including transactions that were subject to review by the DOJ and the FTC and cleared, either subject to remedy or not. And notably, the DOJ filed an action seeking to unwind a transaction that the DOJ had approved more than 10 years ago, subject to remedy. Again, we'll see what the court does with that challenge, but it is an aggressive posture to be sure. That's not the only deal that they are challenging currently in court, but it is a consistent theory that they've expressed. Essentially, the consolidation that has been permitted to happen under the HSR regime in the view of the current authorities has been too permissive. The consolidation is too much, and they're looking to do what they can to limit any further consolidation. And to that final point, and I mentioned this a little earlier, big seems to be bad again. That used to be in 1960s, 1970s in the United States. Big was bad just by being a big player, having a large market share. Anything you did was subject to challenge. And here in this current environment in the United States, if you're big in any particular position and you're looking to make any acquisition or grow by acquisition and not organically, the agencies are going to closely scrutinize your transactions. So you need to be prepared to navigate that scrutiny, have a very compelling pro-competitive justification for the transaction, and face an agency that's going to presume that the motivation for the transaction may be pernicious. But that's it for the United States. And thanks again for the opportunity to participate on this podcast.
Great. Paul and Brian, thank you so much for sharing your insights. It's been a real pleasure talking to you. And to those listening, we hope you found this episode informative. Please do tune in for another episode of TMT Talk.